Welcome to A Meaningful Marketplace.
I'm Sarah Massoni from Oregon State University's Food Innovation Center, where I've helped countless dreamers launch their new food products. It's the science of taking a food delight from the kitchen to mass manufacturing and still keeping its great taste. That's what I do. I've been called the woman with the million-dollar palate, although I haven't tried to cash that check yet. Listen in weekly for real-life stories.
I'm Sarah Marshall, owner of Marshall's Hot Sauce and author of Preservation Pantry, Modern Canning from Root to Top and Stem to Core.
I love inspiring business owners to get started on their journey, encourage folks to be part of their local community, and I'm excited to help business owners tell their stories.
Hello and welcome to Meaningful Marketplace. We are here weekly to discuss the journeys of food entrepreneurs. We're glad you joined us today as we bring you stories of hope and inspiration. This is Sarah Marshall, owner of Marshall's Hot Sauce.
And Sarah Massoni of Oregon State University's Food Innovation Center. Hi, Sarah Marshall.
Hey, Sarah Massoni. How are you?
Good. I heard you're making like thousands of bottles of hot sauce today.
I'm kidding. I am. And my fingertips are burning. I think it's splashed a little hot sauce on my face.
Aww.
So my face is burning. I'm getting ready for the PDX Hot Sauce Expo. I've never done it before. I'm super stoked about it. All my hot sauce friends have done it. I'm usually at the farmer's market, but this year I have hired some buddies, our co-host being one of them, to help me do the expo. We're going to come. We're going to do it. I'm pretty excited about it. I'm also going to be filming for a YouTube show that's going to be on there called Havoc, so people can look it up. Apparently, I'm going to be on there. So we'll see. I'm going all in. I'm hot sauce bro-ing it up.
You're the hot sauce queen. If I ever knew one.
Yep. So that's what I'm up to. Everybody, stay tuned. More hot sauce coming at you, but it'll be very exciting. Yes. So that's all I'm doing. What about you, Sarah? You are right now in Idaho, which is fun because we're talking Idaho.
I know. I'm in Idaho, and I'm here to help judge the Idaho Milk Processors annual cheese competition, which is happening tomorrow on Tuesday, August 5th. And then the winners are going to be announced, I believe, later this week in Sun Valley, Idaho, where there's a big dairy conference. It's the Idaho Dairy Conference that happens every summer.
Perfect. I'm excited for you. You always amaze me, especially with your judging skills. You're a cheese judge. You're an ice cream judge. You're a chocolate judge. You do it all. And I think you're the best.
I only judge the good categories.
<I know. laughs> Well, you get to pick and choose.
Right.
Well, we have been partnering with the Regional Food Business Center to bring you guests from our 6-state region. And we're currently meeting with business owners from the great state of Idaho. I'd like to welcome our co-host today. We have Kelly Cox. She is part Idaho, part Portland, and she's filling in for Yana today. Kelly farms in Idaho, but lives in Portland. And she's also my buddy. Hey, Kelly.
We're thinking of changing her name to Sarah.
Yeah. Seriously. So we can just be all Sarahs. That sounds fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, welcome, Kelly. I wanted you to fill in for Yana today because she couldn't make it. And I said, it's okay. I know an Idaho friend.
Perfect.
So can you tell us just real quick, before we bring our guests on, because I know that you're in Idaho, what are you farming right now in Idaho?
Well, I'm doing a lot of farming of weeds and rocks.
Sounds right.
I thought that I could get away with farming multiple sites, one in Idaho and then maybe one or two in Oregon. And that was a lot of hubris on my part. So I'm out there looking at my beans because I do a lot of dried beans, and I have some rows that are 2 months ahead of schedule, ready to pull and harvest, which is... makes my heart race. And then of course I do spicy peppers I was really excited because a few years ago when I started farming here, had the ability to partner up with the Snake River Seed Co-op, and they were gifted these New Mexican indigenous peppers. So I've been farming those for a few years, and the reason I farm them is to give them to Sarah Marshall to make hot sauce. And I'm looking at a very low yield as well. So it's always a tough year. Every year is different. but we try to look at what worked and learn and just accept that, it's nature. We can't really control it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the way it is for every farmer. I don't think that is an uncommon thing. And I think especially in your first few years of farming and in a new place, but I think you'll figure it out. You'll get it going. I'm glad you could join us today and be our Idaho guide as we meet and meet this new guest and we can talk about things Idaho, because I've actually never even been to Idaho, so you know more about it than I do.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to meet our guest.
Of course. And we would like to encourage you to connect with your state by signing up for the Regional Food Business Center newsletter. It's a breeze to sign up. Just go to Northwest Rocky Mountain Regional Food Business Center.com, hit connect with us, and choose the button to receive newsletters. We want to thank our sponsor for supporting the Meaningful Marketplace. Thank you for helping us spread the word about small business owners and entrepreneurs. Let's hear a word from our sponsor. The Northwest and Rocky Mountain Regional Food Business Center is the proud sponsor of the Meaningful Marketplace podcast, giving a voice to food from across the six-state region of Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, Washington, and Wyoming. The Food Business Center supports Northwest and Rocky Mountain food industry makers as part of the USDA's National Network of Food Business Centers, supporting a more resilient, diverse, and competitive food system as a go-to source for small and mid-tier food and farm businesses with a focus on underserved communities, providing education in the form of technical knowledge, business programs, and industry news. We sponsor trade shows, meetups, and conferences to connect growers, producers, retailers, distributors, and processors, all to stimulate business and raise the standards of our storied food industry. Join us as we travel through the six-state region learning more about food makers, food hubs, and food systems. Visit the website at Northwest Rocky Mountain Regional Food Businesses.com to get connected. And we have the pleasure of speaking with a food cart owner today from Idaho. Would you like to introduce yourself, Shane?
My name is Shane Clark. I'm a chef up here in the North Idaho area. And yeah, I've just been cooking for about 17 years. I've been an executive chef for about 12 of those years. Opened multiple restaurants, worked as a chef at multiple restaurants. And I finally started my own business, Powwow, this food truck, which focuses on pre-European style Native American cuisine. And we opened that up in 2022, and yeah, we're just chugging along, rolling, and growing the business, trying to, plug in holes where we can, and going through all the fun stuff of being a business owner.
yeah, we feel that. And if people want to find you online or social media, do you have a social media presence? They can follow your journey if they're not there in Idaho.
Absolutely. On Facebook, we're real simple. It's just Powwow. And then on Instagram, our handle is PW Food Truck Post PF for Post Falls, both those social medias. And we're currently in the middle of recreating a new website for our business, too. So that's in the works.
Perfect.
We had one, but we're in a transition with that right now.
Well, we'll link those in the show notes so people can find them and follow along. We always like them to see what's going on there. And I really want to know, if I were to come and visit your cart, what would be the item that I would have to order? Must have order.
So that's good that you asked that, because I actually designed a menu item on there that is specific for that. And it's our, I call it our Powwow fry bread. We have a section on our menu where we do entrees that are like, they're almost like, I don't know if anybody, you've ever tried an Indian taco or anything like that. They're kind of built that way. It's basically just fry bread, gets meat on the top, a little bit of sauce. And what I put on top of mine is a medley of the Three Sisters, which is beans, corn, and squash in Native American cuisine. And I call it my Powwow fry bread. It's like my signature item, but it has like, on it is everything that captures Native American cuisine and like in its, basic essence. It's got bison. It has smoked salmon to represent the tribes up here in the Pacific Northwest region. And then it has wajapi, which is a berry sauce, our avocado spruce sauce, a honey maple sauce that I make. And then, yeah, the Three Sisters blend is a fresh medley, beans, corn, squash. It's got a little bit of tomato and bell pepper in it. And it's dressed up with a sumac vinaigrette. Get some toasted seeds. And then it also gets a Three Sisters blended puree at the base of the fry bread too. So that would be the dish that I recommend any first timer that comes and gets, for sure.
I want it right now. Sounds so rad.
I know. Yeah.
Kelly and Sarah, you're both in Idaho right now. Are you close to Shane's cart or is it far?
No.
You're far away.
He's like You're like across the border from Spokane, right? On the
Yeah,
map.
I'm like 15 minutes away from Spokane.
Yeah,
I think I'm too far south in the falls. Twin Falls is further south, pretty sure.
Is like how unique is your cart in that area? Or is there a bigger community of cooks and eaters out there that are doing indigenous cuisine?
No, that's kind of the big challenge is that there isn't. I'm the only spot in our area that does, real traditional Native American food.
There is a group of students learning about Native American traditional foods running a food cart in the Portland area through one of the
Yes. Yeah.
community colleges.
Oh yeah, and there's a really good chef over there. I forgot her name, but she runs Javelina in Portland. Yep. What she does is kind of it's very similar to what I do.
Can you tell us the story of your name, Powwow?
So it's an Algonquian word. It's where the word powwow actually comes from. It means something like spiritual leader, spiritual healer, something to that effect. But Algonquian and the Anishinaabe group of tribes from like the Dakotas to Minnesota, Wisconsin, and all that, it's kind of falls under the same language, Ojibwe, and all that, different variations of the same dialect. And I'm Turtle Mountain Chippewa, which is Anishinaabe, Ojibwe. My tribe's in northern North Dakota, like right along the Canadian border. It's kind of where the name came from. It was just something that developed over the years. And, through my culture, through reading, through study, it's just something I kind of landed on. And I felt like it really captured what I wanted to do with the food. The food was meant to be a connection to our culture, to our, ancestors, to our history, and also be something that could represent, food as not just something that tastes good, but medicine as well. It's good for our bodies. It's good for our soul, and it still tastes good because I'm a chef, so food's got to taste good for me, and it's got to taste good for people. I don't want to lose that aspect, that's my goal. That kind of cross that, so I tell people all the time it's accidentally healthy.
When you look your cart up, if you just Google you, it says that you put in a modern twist on traditional food. And I think that you can tell that you definitely have that chef aspect of it. And I think it's really cool. But also you use locally sourced ingredients. And I was just wondering how you find and connect with the ingredients that you use and the farmers and the people around you. Like, how do you find the people you get your ingredients from?
Well, that's it fluctuates a lot. Getting the meats really tough, but so I kind of bounce back and forth between a lot of vendors with that one. Thankfully, Northern Latitudes Foods, they've been pretty steady for me. He does a really good job. That's the best wild rice I've ever had. I recommend that to everybody all the time. And other than that, it's just, it's focused on cooking everything from scratch, trying to be as local as I can without putting myself out of business. So that's kind of the challenge. Getting a lot of organic and local stuff, it can be pricey, and it's not really, it's difficult to try to fit that into like a value-driven market, is how I'd say it. So I kind of really got to find that balance, but I try to do the best I can with it, but it is a challenge.
Shane, for our listeners, can you just describe a little bit about what pre-colonial ingredients mean so that if they want to try doing some stuff, they can't make it to your cart and they want to make something that's pre-colonial, what would that mean?
Oh, so I would say just start with what it isn't. So I wouldn't use beef. I wouldn't use chicken. I wouldn't use dairy. I wouldn't use pork, cane sugar, or even wheat flour. All those ingredients right there are pretty much the big staples of European foods that were brought over to the North American continent. Look for herbs as well, garlic. I guess there's versions of wild onions that were used over here, but the big yellow onions that we see, I can't remember where those are from, but they're not really indigenous either. But there's all different types of wild onions over here. Garlic wouldn't be one. So the spices and herbs would change up a lot. The spices and herbs I use are like sage, chili powders are actually really good. Annatto, it comes from a tree in northern Mexico, Central America. Tribes would use that to dye their clothing, cook their foods with. It's what's used today to dye yellow cheddar. I use sumac, that has a really good like citrusy flavor. Can be used in dishes and drinks. You make a sumac lemonade, has a really citrusy, good citrusy flavor. Cacao, chocolate powder, another good spice I use. Herbs, I would say that's a tough one. Mint, well, sage, I already said that one. Douglas fir, which is part of the pine family. Juniper, I mean, there's like thousands, but these are the ones that I think are like FDA approved.
And you mentioned Northern Latitude Foods, and I just wanted to tell listeners that last year they were guests on our show. And so if people want to look them up and hear more about their story, it was episode 195. So if they want to find a little bit more out about them, they can listen to that show too, because it was a great show. They're great, great people.
Yes. It's also a product for my last year when I had a farm shop, I carried their rice. And I'm curious, Shane, I have had a very interesting experience trying to feed Idaho eaters. And so I'm curious what it's been like for you when people come to your truck and they're like, wait, can I get beef on that? And you're like, that's not what we do here. What's that journey been like for you?
It's just part of like education. You know, for me, I got to remember that I'm introducing people to a new type of cuisine, you know, that they really haven't seen before. So I always keep that in the back of my mind to understand that I need to, you know, I need to explain to them what I'm serving, you know, and why it is. And people are pretty open to that. It's not really much of a challenge. And if they're not, they don't get upset about it. You know, they'll just casually say, no, thank you, not for me. I mean, it's been a challenge in the sense that, you know, it's not a basic food that I do, a basic cuisine, one that's very common. It's actually not common up here at all. So, but I think people for the most part have been very open to it. And the people who, the regulars I have that I've introduced to it, they love it. So a lot of regulars that come back for it, and it's slowly growing on people, I think. And that's really the goal.
And I'm trying to think if there's anything even like that in the Boise area. And nothing's coming to the top of my mind right now. And I don't want to omit anybody, but I can't think of somebody else doing this kind of cuisine.
Not that I know of. The closest one I know is Javelina in Portland. That's about it.
I saw a couple of folks doing stuff in Spokane. And so that's why I wonder, well, maybe there's stuff going up in that area that's going on. And like, there's this community starting to build and traveling over the state line, but we're a big massive state, like it's just separated by a lot of distance. So
I was wondering if you have any suggestions or advice for other native chefs and food makers. One, would you recommend doing a food cart or brick and mortar? And two, if somebody has a food item that they'd like to potentially share with your menu or create like a special collab, would that be something you might be interested in?
Absolutely. If there's any Native American chefs out there, especially in my area, that want to get off the ground and, you know, cook, I'd be more than willing to collaborate with that. Absolutely. The goal is to bring better food ways, you know, to people and to bridge the culture of what we do. And part of that is, you know, people cooking food for themselves and, you know, opting to make meals that are balanced and healthy, clean, hopefully food that doesn't travel very long. It's not processed. You know, that's the goal. That's where I'd like to go down.
My nephew is Indigenous and he's working in a casino in Minnesota this summer as a cook. And my niece, his sister, got to go to Hawaii this last summer and do an internship. And he was bummed because he didn't get to do an internship. So I was wondering, would you ever consider having a fellow like that come and do a summer internship in your cart?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. My regular executive chef days before I was have the fun times of being a business owner. That was one of the joys I took in being a chef was, you know, training cooks, bringing them up, watching them grow, watching them develop. That was always something that I took joy in and pleasure in doing. So for sure. Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, let's talk about the location of your food cart and how people can get to you. We'll be right back.
Oregon State University's College of Agricultural Sciences and the Food Innovation Center are proud sponsors of Meaningful Marketplace. With a mission to serve all Oregonians, we are committed to giving voice to those whose food and agricultural stories are not always heard. By providing access and opportunity for a more diverse and just food system, because food brings people together.
Okay, so Shane, what is the address and how do people find you?
So we are located in Post Falls, Idaho, which is a pretty small town right between Coeur d'Alene, Idaho and Spokane. But it's all really becoming one big city now. But we're at 3758 East Horsehaven Ave in Post Falls, to be exact. And it's a food truck court. So I'm there with about 14 to 15 other food trucks, and there's a pavilion with that has other food vendors inside too.
That's incredible that Post Falls has developed something like that.
Oh yeah, we're not. There's another food truck court that opened up in Post Falls too, down by the river. So
really?
It's yeah, it's growing.
That's amazing. That's so inspiring to hear, because I'm outside of the city in Treasure Valley, and there's so many small suburban areas that would benefit from having access to something like that.
I think the food cart pods and the food cart community is like just a wonderful thing, and it's such a great way to bring people together, because even in my neighborhood, which, you know, I live in the city, I live in Portland, but our neighborhood is the Woodstock neighborhood, and once they put in this food cart pod called The Heist, they put in an old bank where the inside is kind of like a little bar, and then there's about 20 food carts outside. But before, we have one main street in Woodstock, and I would say people didn't really hang. Like, you didn't see people in your neighborhood. And once they put in the food cart pod, like, everyone goes there. You know, I have a daughter. You see all the kids from the school. All the parents hang out. We'll meet up there for different things. They'll do a lot of, like, fundraiser stuff there. And I think it really brought the community together, especially after and during the – it opened kind of right after the pandemic. But it brought people back together. And I think those spaces are really important. And I think it's a nice, affordable way for people to start a business. So, you know, Shane, I don't know if that's how you felt, but I know it's really hard to – open a restaurant, and a food cart way is a little more approachable way to open a business. Do you have plans to ever open a restaurant, or are you going to stick with the food cart?
No, I definitely want to expand Powan to a restaurant for sure. That's been our long-term goal, and we're inching our way there. And we've thought about, you know, opening up another food truck too, maybe having multiple ones with that, but a restaurant would definitely be, I feel like, the way to go. It'd be nicer for people to be able to come and sit down at a location that they can eat with us, as opposed to having to, you know, go out of the way and go to a food truck and, you know, not have anywhere to sit and try something brand new that they've never tried before. I know that's really, that could be present a challenge for people to get out and, like, really try the food and the cuisine. So a restaurant would be a more approachable, like, scenario and environment for people to come and, you know, experience Native American cuisine.
Well, that's a good goal. I'm glad you have, you know, future plans of opening a brick and mortar. I think a lot of people do. I think a food cart is a great way to start and kind of test out and, you know, get your systems down and figure it all out, and then you can move forward. We've had lots of friends in Portland that do it that way, and I think it's a good way to do it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a lot less overhead and, mm-hmm. you know, and with, you know, opening up a restaurant.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Yep. Yeah.
Can you tell us how storytelling plays a role in your food and your philosophy?
Just if I have the time to communicate it with a customer, I will. I'll tell them the background of the food, the why, the what, medicinal purposes it served, you know, what salmon meant to Pacific Northwest tribes, what a specific herb or spice would mean. So if I have time to do that, if they're willing to listen, which there's a lot of people who are, then, you know, I'll fit that in. But sometimes it can really be just some people just walk up. They're just wanting to eat and they'll just go for it. You know, they'll be like, give me that. I'll take that. I'm sold. But it's got bison, you know. But yeah, there's a lot of that, too. So both of them it's just a matter of the, I guess, figuring out if it's appropriate to do it or not in the moment. But if I can do it, I will, for sure.
And do you do any events outside of the food cart pod? Like, do you do any catering, or have you thought of in taking any of those beautiful, wonderful sauces you're making and bottling them and selling them outside of the cart?
Yeah, we're actually working on selling our wajapi. I do a specific take on that. It has, like, dried chilies in it, herbs, some spices, all indigenous, as well as the spice that I make. It's got seven different herbs and spices in it. So it's like a blend. And then we also make our own, I like to call them, like, electric light prebiotic sodas. So their base is like a burdock root, a little bit of salt, a little bit of yaupon holly. And they kind of, you know, and then all natural sweeteners. I only use maple, honey, or agave. All natural ingredients. There's no shortcuts. There's no fake ingredients in what I use. Yeah, we do caters. Right now during the summer, I do so many caters, I'm, like, going blind sometimes. especially with when it's hard to like find a staff. So I've done a lot of big caters for Gonzaga colleges here, a lot of native projects that are getting up and running. I do a lot of caters for the local tribe here. We work really closely with the Coeur d'Alene tribe a lot. So yeah, I definitely do a lot of stuff outside of just the walk-up truck. The business outside of the walk-up is almost matching the walk-up. So
have you thought about putting your beverage in kegs and supplying other restaurateurs with your beverage? Right now, beverage community is huge. Like,
Yeah, I've thought about that. Just finding the time and the effort to do it. Right now we have a 2 month old that was just born. So
and congratulations.
We got a 4 year old. Yep. So I got a family full time to take care of too while running the business too. And we kind of try to juggle that all by ourselves. So just a matter of finding the time. We just got to grow a little bit, hopefully start hiring a couple helpers. And then, yeah, we'd love to get to that point.
Well, I do know that Sarah Masoni is very good at helping people do things like that. I've seen her do it.
Yeah.
if you need somebody to help you. I've seen her take people to the fancy food show and get their drinks into beverage kegs and cans. She's a miracle worker.
Yeah,
oh, that's awesome. Yes, I'm like a soda connoisseur. Oh. So I had to have a soda program on my menu. You know what I mean? I make two sodas and I make two still drinks, but I just want to turn them all into sodas, I think. So
well,
I'm working.
So the first step is to create the throw, and the throw is actually the concentrate of all the flavors. And then you take that and that goes to the bottler, and the bottler then puts it in with the water and a bright tank where they carbonate it. And then it goes into the bottling. But in your case, you can actually buy disposable. I know disposable is not that great, but to get started, you can buy disposable kegs and circumvent the need to have those big, huge metal kegs.
Yeah, your beverages sound really cool, and it sounds like things other people aren't doing, you know, so it seems like something that would be very popular and innovative and cool. So
I can help you just kind of think through the first steps of contemplating the idea of doing that.
Well, I actually brew my sodas myself.
Yeah.
Well, a friend of mine, he has a keg and we kind of do it, but I do that. I make a concentrate of my sodas.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we hit it with water and then he brews it in his keg. So that's kind of how we do it right now.
Yeah, that's all I got to do. You can employ your buddy. He can be your brewer. Yeah.
Well, we have a couple minutes left. So Shane, you know, a lot of our listeners are people that are currently dreaming up businesses. Any advice for those folks?
Oof, yes. Keep going. Especially when you feel like it's getting difficult or you may want to throw in the towel, that's when you need to keep going even more.
Yeah, that's when the paradigm's shifting, isn't it?
Yep, exactly. That's when you're about ready to have that breakthrough of what your next step needs to be. So if you have a vision, if you have a dream, stick with it and keep going. Everything takes time. It takes time to build it. It takes time to get to where you feel it may want to be. And I feel like if you wouldn't have that dream or vision, if it wasn't important, it's supposed to be out there. So I think no matter what, just keep going, keep pushing forward and stick to your vision and don't bend it.
That's good advice.
And Shane, what do you need from your community right now?
Ooh, just to keep doing what they're doing. I love my community. Just keep supporting, keep staying open to growth and trying new food and trying new cuisines and new cultures, seeing how being, you know, open to different approaches to life that different cultures may have and different people and, you know, just everybody really coming together in that aspect, you know. Variety is the spice of life, right? It's the spice of food as well. So that's kind of the goal. Keep pushing, keep welcoming people and cultures and, you know, just growing as a community.
I love it.
Kelly, do you have any last thoughts for Shane?
I'm just curious, knowing you've already got a great source for your wild rice, with some of those key things that you have on your menu, like what would be your ideal thing to be able to source from a farmer or a fisher person or something that you felt like was a nice food system supply chain?
Ooh, turkey or salmon.
Okay.
I think if we could get a clean way of those, that'd be awesome. But that comes with like taking care of the rivers and taking care of the water. So I think that probably starts there.
We had a turkey person on the show.
We did. We just had a turkey farmer.
Yeah.
That grows. I don't know if she's close to you though. That's the hard part. Idaho's big.
Turkey's underrated. It definitely shouldn't be consumed mainly, one time a year.
We eat it at our house all the time.
Yes, it's very good.
Yeah, Vicky Nye from South Fork Free Range Turkeys.
Hmm.
So maybe look her up. She might be close to you. She grows turkeys free range organic.
Yeah, that was last year, wasn't it? Yeah.
We had her on, just a little
year?
While ago. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Episode 242. But she was great. She's from London. Her mom was a turkey farmer in London, and then she moved to Idaho to turkey farm too.
Wow, that's awesome.
Isn't that fun?
She takes it very seriously.
She really does. She really does. Yeah.
Yeah. We totally have to connect them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, Shane, it was so good to meet you. I hope someday I get to come experience your food in Idaho. It sounds wonderful. I love what you're doing. I love everything about your business, and I hope you get your brick and mortar. Keep up the great work. I know you're working hard and representing your culture, and I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on and telling your story.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Thanks to our listeners for tuning in. You can rate us on Apple Podcasts and iTunes, please. And you can follow us on Instagram or YouTube, Meaningful Marketplace Podcast. You can call or text Sarah and I with questions at 503-395-8858. We couldn't do this without our fantastic team at Joy of Creation Production House. Thanks to Dave, our production coordinator, and Haley, our audio engineer. Thanks for joining. We'll be back next week. And thanks to our co-host, Kelly, today. Thanks for joining us, Kelly.
Thanks for thinking of me.
We'll be back next week, everybody. Bye.
Bye for now.
If you love the stories we bring you each week, please consider supporting us on Patreon. As an independent media company, your support is absolutely essential. It allows us to continue creating high-quality professional episodes that amplify the voices of women, small business owners, writers, artists, and creatives, and keep their stories free from commercial pressure. By becoming a Patreon member, you're not just supporting us, you're investing in the future of independent media. Please visit patreon.com/thejoyofcreationproductionhouse to join our community today. Thank you for listening and supporting our podcast dreams.